Welcome to the EdgeShift podcast with Katie Novak.
Really around this idea of like research and strategies and people doing interesting things.
And Chris Astle.
Doing what's best for kids, like putting kids at the center.
Our goal at EdgeShift is to dive into educational trends and practices and to connect you with educators and innovators around the world who are committed in subtle and in grand ways to shifting the fabric of education. Check out the show notes for ways to connect with us and our guests.
Yeah. So Katie, what a great conversation we're going to have today on the podcast. I know as we're back to school in so many places around the globe and we're thinking about devices and apps and the different things we're doing in the classroom and how we streamline that for our students. I know it's front of mind for all of us. And our guest today has really dives into a great framework for how we position that and how we start to think about doing the right things for kids in our classrooms to really set them up for success in their future.
Yeah, exactly. And what are the ways, you know, this idea of tech fluency has come up here on the EdShift podcast before, and that comes up in today's conversation as well, and the importance of, you know, not just how, but why and when technology is used. So really excited to share this conversation with everyone. Let's dive in. So thrilled to be joined here today by Philippa Raithmell, lead for digital strategy, learning and innovation at a group of schools in the Middle East. Really thrilled to have you here, Philippa, with us and to explore some of your journey and the work that you're doing. Welcome to the EdShift podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. And with it, obviously the role that you've just said is really new. And so I'm in that bubble at the moment of just loving every second of what I'm doing and feel like my brain's been switched on again. And it's just, yeah, I feel really excited at the minute about it. So it's perfect time to be interviewing me for a podcast because I'm enthused.
Love it. Love it. What a great place to be in. Awesome. So yeah, tell us a little bit more, you know, about your own journey. What got you, you know, to where you are in this exciting new role?
Thank you. So for those people who are listening who've never heard of me, and why should you have? I've been an educator for the past 13 years. Prior to that, I had actually done a fashion marketing degree, which I always kind of mentioned because I think it's really important to know that people who are in edtech weren't necessarily, you know, IT geeks and kind of, you know, I'm not a coder. I love coding. I think it's very clever, but there's a level of it that I definitely cannot do and don't understand. But I think it's really important for people to kind of understand that it can be anyone and to, I guess, partially break down that myth of the idea that, you know, my EdTech digital lead, anyone who's in terms of innovation has to be part of a certain sector. So yeah, I started off doing that and found out that you could teach fashion in schools, which was kind of a next like, wow, that sounds amazing. Everyone else to be as excited about fashion as I was, and ended up teaching food and nutrition, textiles, resistant materials, engineering, up through to students aged 18. So what we'd call like sixth form in the UK. And then I led the design technology department for kind of 9 years in the UK and just sort of got to a point where I wanted a little bit more, wanted something a bit different, and came over to the Middle East where I was presented with the opportunity that design and technology wasn't really necessarily a thing. The school that I'd gone into was a primary and I was secondary trained. And would I like to be the person that's in charge of the iPads? And so my kind of journey from digital EdTech lead kind of started there, really, of this growing school, this beautiful school, Apple distinguished already because of their initial pre-prep school. And ended up within a year training over 100 members of staff, rolling out one-to-one devices, doing every single bit of training, whilst also learning how to use a device myself. And part of that, I guess the success of that was me being really honest and saying, you know what, I'm not sure, or I'll go and find out, and actually just persevering with it myself. And I think that's always been my ethos throughout life generally, but is that idea that we need to be really honest with people that we're training and we're teaching, and sharing that kind of fear of our own, but also saying we don't know everything and we'll help and we'll find out, but I don't always have all the answers. So did all that and then got the school re-distinguished, an Apple Distinguished School. So wrote a rather lengthy book for Apple, which is the process for that has totally changed, but it was really amazing doing it because it taught me so much about the breadth and the story and the vision for schools and how when you're really embedding a strategy, how that should look and how what it should mean to every person that's part of that school as well. I was then lucky enough to go on to another school in the Middle East, who's an outstanding school, rated one of the top in the top 100 in the world, and converted them from being, let's say, analog to digital. So it very much felt like that, but also throughout the pandemic. And then also worked with a lot of the low fee paying schools. So some of our schools that really, if you imagine in the UK or in America or in Canada, where you have very much deprived areas, it would be similar to that kind of level of equipment and facilities for those teaching staff and the students. And so it was about helping them to have the equity of access during COVID and allowing their students to make sure that they were also able to continue to learn, even though they didn't have access to one-to-one devices and you know, all these different fancy gadgets. So that was kind of COVID was a bit of a whirlwind of all of that, but it was wonderful. And towards the end of that was when I'm very like, I probably spend far too much time with it, but I will reply to people when they ask questions to me on social media, because I just think, you know what, at one point I was there and I didn't know the answers and I needed help. And I was kind of, again, replying to somebody and my husband was just like, why don't you just write it down? And then if anyone ever comes to you, you can just give it to them. And I was like, no, because, you know, every story is slightly different. And sometimes there's information mm-hmm. that people don't need. And, you know, I don't want to just ping out something that's kind of generic. But then it kind of was becoming a little bit overwhelming to the point where I was a bit, I felt like I had to continue to do it. And so actually got to the point where I was like, right, okay, maybe I should write this down. And what does that look like? And so I started to think about all the things that I'd done as an ed tech lead and how quite often an ed tech lead, and one of my, I guess, my gripes really is that leadership don't necessarily always understand the importance of that huge role that you've given to somebody who's potentially a class teacher and is teaching 30 hours a week plus marking plus everything else that you're asking them to do. And you're asking them to do this job, which you kind of give to the same par as something else that might just have an event every year or might be like, you know, a little thing that everyone does on a Monday morning or something. Actually, you're asking somebody to be in charge of policy and safeguarding and infrastructure and devices and purchasing and CapEx and OpEx. And then you're asking them to deliver training and you're also asking them to upskill themselves before they upskill your staff. And you're asking them to curriculum develop and you're asking them to design. And then you're also asking them to then think about innovation and what happens next and then potentially events that are coming off that. And then, oh, would you mind just doing a spark and could you lead a conference? And actually you kind of go, right, so that's almost the same as running a school. And that is where it needed to be. And so the concept of the book, when it was published by John Catt Education, was that you have to have all these different things in place. And often people believe there's one part, which is teaching and learning, and they don't realize there's a lot of safeguarding involved. And they also don't realize that there's actually governance that needs to be in place there. And so when I wrote the book, it was all about bringing that together and saying, hey, people, like, this isn't just a, you know, oh, you can do that in half an hour or in your lunch break. This is actually a really big deal. And COVID really helped to sort of highlight that, but still we're kind of left with schools that don't quite know where to go and don't understand potentially the risk they're putting them, their own staff and their children in. And so I guess everyone who's fed back to me, who's read it, has said that this, specifically the first sections about governance and safeguarding, were just elements they'd never even thought about. And that really was the point, was the teaching and learning section, although it is quite big, is almost like a byproduct, because it wasn't for me, that wasn't the reason I wrote it. People know, really, good teachers know how to blend technology into their lesson. It's the other bits that no one realizes. So it was kind of all about that. And that's actually the reason that I got the job that I'm in now, because they want me to implement my book into the school. We're building the school right from scratch again. And so it's really exciting to be able to be doing that project. But so yeah, so that's, like I say, in a nutshell, but I feel like that took a really long time to say.
Well, I appreciate so much how you went from, fashion and foods and nutrition to, hey, do you want to be the person in charge of the iPads? to, you know, leading digital strategy and innovation. Mm. I think I always love hearing people's journeys. I appreciate and I would say I'm cut from a similar cloth in terms of like, yeah, I don't really know. Don't really know how to do that, but I can probably figure it out. You know, and so many people walk around being a bit afraid, I think, especially when it comes to technology. Right. There's resistance and fear, you know, for good reason. Because it can be really overwhelming and frustrating. But I think helping empower people is so important.
And I love the way you framed that as, you know, just saying you didn't know and asking questions, because I think so many of our listeners find themselves in the same place where, you know, technology, computer science, a lot of these places, it feels so inaccessible. It feels like this thing over there and you don't know how to get started or how to start to, you know, understand it, but it evolves so quickly. So we're kind of always in that learning space. And when we start to just accept that, you know, we don't always know all the answers, and we model that for the teachers we're supporting and the students that we're working with, then it starts to feel like this thing that, you know, we can be literate in without being masters of, and that the more we use it and the more we practice, it becomes something that, you know, we feel a little bit more fluent with and capable of. And I think that's so important. Because of the role that it plays and because of how technology can really help us achieve some of the things we're trying to do.
Yeah, no, and I think it's, I mean, I even say it to my own children. So I have an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old, and my 8-year-old will say to him, you know, he'll say, I found it really hard to do. Well, did you ask? And he went, no, because, you know, it was really busy and they wanted to just get on whatever it happened to be. And but you always ask because, and he would say to him, because my husband actually said it was really nice. He was like, if you didn't know, definitely there was someone else who didn't know. And actually you putting your hand up and being brave will have made someone else feel so much better. Mm-hmm. And I kind of always, like, I guess that's so reflective of where the way we are anyway, but like also just that admittance, because even now people will kind of just be like, oh, you must have heard of. And I'm quite frequently go, no, but tell me, because how am I meant to know? I'm only one person. I have to keep up because people talk to me about things and people want to share ideas and concepts. And actually, just because, you know, I've got a digital strategy or a tech lead or anything in my name, it doesn't necessarily mean that I have my hand on every single plate that's spinning in the world. Mm-hmm. And these ideas are only great because communities in schools make them great. And it's just about empowering people. So,
yeah, that's huge. I'd love to dig in a little bit more to some of the core of, you know, when you're talking about this idea of, you know, governance and leadership and the importance of that. You know, we do global research and really saw certainly over the pandemic, that the capabilities that were the most impactful for success, particularly with tech, during the pandemic were things like involving students and parents in planning for technology. You know, so I wanted to dig into some more of the granularity in terms of what you've seen and what are the most important places for people to focus when it comes to both the planning and the implementation.
So the book is based around a concept of this digital ecosystem, and on the front of the book is this geodesic dome, and the dome for me really represents this governance. So a geodesic dome, so it all goes back to biomimicry and my design technology days, but it is the strongest structure, and actually as a formation, without the structure being there and without those strong elements that are connected together in these gorgeous little shapes, means that it doesn't hold itself up, and that is your governance to a T. And within that, you need to be able to place everybody's roles. So the governance for me, the piece about that is so important, because what you quite often get is your parents, your students and your teachers don't really understand what you're trying to achieve. And so when we're rolling things out and when we're setting new things up, getting buy-in from people is so important. And even if, you know what, even if you kind of, you know, 95% know what you're going to be doing because you've done your kind of research and due diligence prior to getting that information from parents, you at least are asking and getting that response. And And if something comes back and it totally skews what you assumed or decided, then obviously maybe that can have an informed decision. But one, asking people what they think and how they feel about certain things will just give that buy-in when you actually do it so much more strength. Yeah. But it also allows people to kind of go, okay, but in my role, what does that mean? And I think this all comes to kind of down to the school's vision. Like quite frequently, you'll now see schools changing their vision and adding 21st century skills, and we're going to have lifelong learners who are digitally fluent. It's like, great, but actually, what was your ethos before that? And what was your vision before that? Because that's where your digital strategy should be sitting. And so whenever I plan digital strategies and the governance level with leadership teams, it's all about what sorts of students do you want to have and what do you want them to be able to do? Because it should link in with your values. It should have nothing to do with the word digital, because that is a total byproduct of the fact that you are just being a forward-thinking school who recognizes that life has changed, not necessarily education. We know we need to educate people. We know we need to be literate. We know we need to understand maths and numeracy and all those things. But how do we do that in a way that can engage students and can engage parents? And I think even down to that level of, what does that mean? Because then you can go to departments and say, okay, well, what does it mean for your department? What does that look like? Without thinking about what tech you want, what would you like to see students being able to do? And how does that mimic reality? How does that mimic their real life work? How can they build those bridges and fuse those understandings of concepts that are happening out of school and in school? Because then that also gives you the layer of when you then talk to parents and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And it's going to be a really big change. And no one really likes change. But you know what, we've looked at it in these different areas and we've said, okay, this works for us and this is what we want your children to do and be like. And we need your help to do that. And as soon as parents realize that it is for the best of their child and that actually it's not about, you know, oh, we're trying to get them all sat on screen so they get babysat. It's actually about infusing learning into real world scenarios. And actually, if we stagnate and stay as we are, we're not teaching your children what the world is like. And so that for me is really building that governance and kind of that why and that power behind your ethos and your message. And it doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with specific technology. Like one of the things in the book that I try to make really clear is, you know, I have my preferred devices, but schools have different budgets and no school is the same. You can't just copy paste from next door. And actually having those conversations build into your policy development, the understanding of why it's not okay to let students, I don't know, play on devices at break time, or why they're not allowed to just have any setting they want to, or why we don't have 17 different maths apps. And actually we don't want to overload them cognitively. So actually we've got two for this year group. We might have three for a different year group, but that's because they're older and they need certain different strands or what have you. And it really is about thinking like about the messages that you want to get across. And so for me, that piece about governance is exactly the traditional way that every school would think about it in terms of their school. Is what are they trying to achieve and what is the foundations of that to make sure it can happen? And about empowering people. And I mean, obviously side notes of that are things like, you know, within the governance element, there are things like, okay, have you thought long term? Have you got a strategy? How is it going to get you there? And how do you need to achieve that? You know, schools quite often make mistakes of not using CapEx and then not having anything to replace things with. So, you know, they've not fulfilled their budget requirements. And then in 5 years they go, oh no, everything's changed and we don't have any money left. And there's so many different things like that. But there's also so much that people can strip back. And again, governance is about going back to things and saying, you know what, we did that last year, but did it work? Or did we really like that app? Did it do what we were told it would do by the company when they came in and they had all their, you know, fireworks when they were sending us their display? Or actually, did it not fit the purpose that we tried to do? And even that, as an annual review, as either departments, it depends on how big a school is, but equally just having that and having people that will hold people accountable, say, you know what, this is costing this much money, and is that really worth it? And so those different elements to it will always help you to then have conversations in a really structured way with parents and kind of go, well, actually, did you know that this, you know, if I go back to it, this it's a screen time policy. And I go back to it because constantly in WhatsApp groups, I'm biting my tongue with parents who go, oh, more screen time. And I'm like, oh, it's so not what research says. And I'm definitely guaranteed that your child is sat on a device somewhere right now out of school. And so it's all those sorts of things that you can actually go, well, actually within our ethos is that students have infused learning and that their device is here, and but they have the choice because actually we've taught them all these different skills and they know how to self-regulate. And actually, mm-hmm. as a parent, that's really what we should want to be hearing. And so it just builds into so much of it. And it's actually, like I said at the beginning, as an edtech lead, I had no idea. I had no idea I'd be called into safeguarding meetings. I had no idea that I'd be making policies that would need to be linked to teaching and learning, behavior management, and all these different things. And I think it really is an eye-opener of, it's a huge world. It's literally a job in itself to look after all of that.
I think of some of the people that I know in different places in the world that have similar roles to that they're doing, you know, alongside their job as a classroom teacher or a head teacher mm-hmm. or something else. And yeah, I think it's such a good point. there's so much to that. And there's so much that matters in terms of doing it properly.
Mm. Yeah, and having the governance allows people to go, okay, actually, well, if you need to, this job could be multiple people's jobs as long mm-hmm. as they're all communicating with each other. It doesn't have to be on the shoulders of one. It can actually be something that's really infused as actually this is everyone's responsibility. It's like safeguarding, this is everyone's responsibility to uphold those measures that we've put out and said that we're going to do, because if we don't, that dome, that structure crumbles and everybody falls down.
Talked a lot about, you know, like parent involvement. And I think that's so important because, like, as you pointed out, like parents, sometimes they need to understand what this is helping their students learn and how it's getting them to the goals of, you know, ultimately graduating them and putting them out into the world to be successful with whatever they want to do. And then the other thing you mentioned too, and like kids are often always on their devices. So how do you get students, or how do you envision students involved in this as they kind of pick the ways they want to interact and pick the ways they want to use some of the technology that's coming into the school to showcase what they know and to be able to connect a bit to the learning through kind of their interest or their skills that they've been able to find out of the classroom with technology? Like what does their voice look like there?
So, I mean, it's really interesting because I think over the years that's really developed for me, and it started off with modelling things which are quite common in schools, to having, you know, digital leadership teams and giving them the power. So one thing that I used to do was we had digital help desk where students would sit at break time and there would be different people, different break times and things. And they would try and help students to be able to navigate their device better. They might go into classrooms. They'd be the person assisting to help to utilize them in the right way, especially new children coming in, especially, you know, because as a one-to-one school, a new child coming in when they've maybe never had that is quite daunting. And so it kind of starts off with those sorts of models of, you kind of have these student voice and student, they choose which apps maybe they get to have. And there was things like, you know, well, what apps might different year groups want as like a downtime app, instead of having this kind of idea that every different subject might have a golden time app. They actually kind of went, okay, the students have voted for X. But actually, as that's kind of progressed, it's become so much more of actually like the fluency of students, and it really goes back to embedding it into the curriculum and into the teachers' lives, is the sort of the foundations of it really is in each subject, what are we teaching, in each year group, what are we teaching them to do? And I've been, I guess, really lucky in the instances I've worked with directly as a kind of an employed by the school, have always been through school. So going from foundation stage or KG through to 12. And so you can map that out really beautifully. Whereas if you work in a primary or a secondary, middle school, high school, it's a lot harder for you to be able to kind of have those different conversations with maybe the schools that they're coming from. And you're obviously trying to bridge a lot. But if you have the opportunity to be able to do that and work as either a district or a network to be able to actually have those conversations, building in where they're learning different fluencies allows the teachers to get to a certain level. And I often say sort of grade 8, year 9 is an age where every student should be able to pick up their device and go, you've given me a task and this is how I want to be able to do it. Now, in certain instances, that can be done from year six, so going grade five before they're even in middle school, because what you're allowing them to do is having that kind of agency in their own student voice of I've been given this. And maybe in year four, grade four, you're kind of going, okay, I've got a task, but you could use X, Y, or Z to complete that. And I don't really mind what, because to be honest, I just want to know that you've learned that information and that you understand it however you need to understand it. And so if schools are able to embed really simple technologies, and I'm not talking necessarily about apps, like I'm a big kind of native user. So, you know, whatever device you've gone for, if it's Microsoft, Google, or Apple, use what they have, because kids get used to that, then they can transition a lot more easily. Whereas apps tend to disappear and you know, you might not have them again. And who knows what you've really taught them. And actually, what if you have too many, you end up just teaching an app and never actually teaching the content that you need to teach. So about when you sort of build that in, you then get to this stage where students just have that autonomy and they kind of go, okay, well, actually, do you mind if I go off and record this? Or, oh, I had this idea to do it as a podcast. And so you end up having student voice in there. And then at that point, when they're already doing it without even realizing it, is when you can kind of also then go, okay, so, you know, you were talking about X, Y, and Z game. Well, did you know that this system can also do this? So for instance, at the Apple ecosystem has all the UX UI design features. They're all free. So I don't even have to necessarily ask parents to say, you know, oh, this is going to cost quite a bit. I know it might be a bit of a stretch, but they're really enjoying it. Actually, all of a sudden you can kind of go, oh, here's this resource here, here, and here. And instead of then maybe doing the, I don't know, the formal essay assignment, they might make an app for it. So one of the design projects that I used to do at my last school was an innovation app based around sustainability. And they would do models of applications, real world applications. What would that look like? Who's the end user, et cetera. But you can start to build those projects in because you don't need to worry about their digital fluency and what they're actually being able to do. I think there's so much of an assumption that students are creators, but actually many students are only curators. They only kind of absorb it, and they don't actually go away and start to think, how does this work? What can I do? And how can I make that as well? There's such a small percentage of them. And actually what we need to do in schools is teach them all those skills really slowly, to kind of go, you could do any of these things. Anything you can see, you could do that on your device now. So what are you going to do? And you almost open the doors up to them to sort of say, right, okay, what does that look like for you? What does that link into your learning? And then it kind of links into things like for the UK curriculum, and I'm not sure if it's the same in America, but things like EPQ, so extended professional qualifications, where they look at something globally and look at something that might influence a wider community and kind of think, okay, well, actually this is my project, this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to do it. So I think there's so many ways in which we can do that. And I think if we can teach them that in schools and then they can start modeling it at home, parents will start to come on board as well with the idea that actually what they're doing is really meaningful, and potentially what they're doing when they come home prior to that is actually just loss of time, because they're just absorbed in something for such a long time. And don't get me wrong, my children play on their devices. They have them, they do have screen time limits, and we do all that and we talk to them. In fact, I've just sat down with my 12-year-old and been like, turn off your notifications. If your watch pings one more time, I'm going to take it away from you. But literally, to the, you know, I mean, he's just got it. So it's about teaching them in school about, you know, digital resilience, teaching them about how to use things, what they're used for. And then I guess in a pastoral way as well, like something that we're going to be doing in the new school is, how do we teach digital resilience? So how do we teach that and allow them to be well and say, I don't need my phone. My phone is not a pull. I'm a push. I go. If I want to see my phone, I go to it. So for instance, my son has, we've just gone through together and set out some limits for him. And the only person that can get through those limits are me and his dad, no one else. So if he's doing homework, he puts it on to do not disturb. If we need to call him, we can, but no one else can. And so we're starting to build in those different things. And actually, schools have the power to be able to do that as well. All devices now have it. Google have an incredible suite for it. And even Microsoft have got something that you can embed into the devices, and Apple have it all over the place. But it really is about kind of going, okay, how do we balance this? Because for me, technology doesn't need to be used all the time. It needs to be used when it needs to be used. It just should just be there, and I can grab it if I need it. I don't have to have it in my hand. And I think sometimes that message needs to get across to parents that what they're doing in school is really meaningful, and we're teaching them skills. What they're doing at home sometimes isn't that, and it's not that it's bad, because everyone needs downtime. We all look at our devices, we all play games, we all do what have you, you know, listen to podcasts and things, great, but we don't need to do it all the time, and they don't need to come home to do that. And then for you to question what we're doing at school, because as educators, we need to be at the forefront and going, actually, we're the experts, and there's a reason your child's coming to our school, and this is why we're doing it. And that again just goes right back down to that governance of being able to empower your staff with all that information and saying, this is why we're doing it. So if a parent comes over and says, how are you inspiring my child? How are you doing this? Why are they doing this? You can go, this, and this, and this is how, and this is why, and this is what they do. And look, when they graduate, they're going to be incredible.
Really like that piece about, you know, thinking about digital resilience. And I think it connects so much into the empowerment, right? Like, we're empowering students to work with technology and to still be, you know, aware of all of the impacts, good and bad, that it has, and to be able to start to make choices. And I think it is so important that we do that in schools, because we really are setting kids up to understand how these tools and how technology can help them succeed later. So I really like that. And I really like that connection that you've made between the two.
Thank you. Yeah, I think specifically that, I think we're now at a point with technology and integration in schools that we can't have that "that's not my problem" issue anymore. Because actually, from my perspective specifically, if I hand over a device to a teacher or to a student, it's my job and my due diligence to say to them, this is what you're allowed to do, and this is what we want you to do, and we trust you, but you must feed back with that and give back and say, and this is how I will behave with that, and this is will be what I do. And it, you know, it's like, it kind of comes back to, like, it's like not teaching your child to cross a road. Like, you would never let your child just cross the road without having ever said to them, you know, you go to the safest place, you try and cross that crossing, if you can't, you look left and right, even if you are crossing a crossing, all of those things that come as second nature. And actually, what we need to make sure as educators and education systems is that we're saying to parents, education, and not only has education changed now, but the world has changed. You know, parents are on their phones, and even they need to realize it's really hard for us as adults who didn't grow up with it to kind of understand why it's important to students, but also to be digitally resilient ourselves. You see so many teachers and parents using them all the time. And, you know, people will say, I don't have time to learn that. But then they might be on social media for 4 hours, and you go, okay, what did you not have time for? And it really, it's about priorities, isn't it? And, you know, again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it shouldn't be an excuse anymore. Part of being an educator is educating students to be safe online, to be able to use digitally fluent tools, to be able to succeed, because the world that they're going into is just not the world that we live in, that we live in now. It's going to be different again. And it's preparation, isn't it? You know, I'd rather they failed in my school and learn and made, you know, we kind of cooped and went, okay, right, what's next? Let's do that again. Let's try. Then make that mistake outside, where it's so much more dangerous and so much more risky.
Mm-hmm. I love that road analogy. You know, and I just think of that, like, you know, we, in the grand scheme of things, when you think about it, it's like, you know, for us who are, you know, in an older age bracket, it's kind of like we just woke up one day and there was roads, right? And like, imagine just having to be like, oh, there's roads, and like, I don't know how to cross.
How do I get over it?
Yeah, right. So yeah, like, that's basically what, you know, what devices have been like. You know, and yeah, imagine just saying to your kid, just go out into the world and figure it out. It's fine. Yeah, you'll be all right. Yeah. No, we need to give them tools.
Yeah. And I think that's the bridging as well is to do with parents and teachers as well. We have to help parents understand, because we also can't just expect all parents to know that, to understand that, and to respect the fact that that's part of their child's life. And, you know, even as an edtech lead, like, I'm my eldest son, he's my first time I'm doing this. And so, you know, these roles, and I'm kind of thinking, you know, I've had a conversation like, well, what do we want? How do we want this to look? What are we going to let him do? And, you know, and actually, even those conversations in the past in schools, we've worked with counsellors and worked with focus groups of parents because they worry about it. And actually acknowledging that they worry is so important.
Yeah. Yeah, and that mental health element of it for everyone. Yes, for the students in terms of how they're managing their screen time, how they're interacting with technology, but you know, for parents who feel concerned and anxious in a variety of ways and for good reason. How do we support everyone with all of that in a safe, inclusive environment? I'm wondering, Philip, if you have, you know, one or two pieces of advice for one of an educator who's in the place that you were in terms of like, gosh, I've been asked to do all of these things. And, you know, I thought I was just like handing iPads to people, but it's so much more than that. What one or two little pieces of perhaps actionable advice might you have for that person who's feeling a bit overwhelmed, and unsure how to manage themselves or where to go next in terms of having a big giant tech role in front of them.
Absolutely. Well, I would say that I didn't start off with all of that knowledge and all of that before, so had no idea that that was even a necessary knowledge that I had. So kind of take it step by step. I'm the sort of person that likes to have everything done 3 days ago. And actually one of the things over the last 6 years that I've really realized is that that's not possible, surprisingly. So I would say my most important thing, and it's actually one of the first things I ever look at when I go into school, is how many apps do you have? How many platforms does your school run? And how big is your school? Because for me, that says so many things. It says, is there any governance at all? Or is everyone allowed to have total choice of what they run in their classroom, regardless of which year group it is? And that will tell you how much collaboration is going on. So it just tells you so much. It tells you whether they're aware of how many licenses they've purchased, how much money is going out, how much, you know, there are literally strand upon strand that you can pull out of that. So I think from my perspective, if you're going into a school, or even if it's in your school and you've been given that as a new area of promotion, the first thing would be go and sit with your IT guy and say, what do we have? What have we paid for? What do we not pay for, but we have? How does it all work? And go in from that zone, because that will allow you also to then speak to those different teachers and sort of gain their understanding of why they want them and why they've got them. Because quite frequently it's because they've come from a different school and that it really worked in that area. And then the second thing I would say is get some really amazing people in your school who are really passionate about not technology, but their subject, and get them on board with what you're trying to achieve. And what you're trying to achieve is a streamlined, really simple version of potentially what you already have, because many schools are very complicated and complex when it comes to technology, unless they've been built from the beginning up, from where you are there. And I would say use that team to kind of pinpoint areas that you can achieve within small amounts of time, and then the longer year, and then even potentially further than that. So really gaining those like flag bearers, I call them in my book, just people who nothing to do with technology, and they'll say to you, I don't know about that. It's like, I don't want you to. I actually want you to be able to look at this pedagogically and say, is it any good? Do you think it's worth it? Can we question, can we challenge what we're doing here? Because then you can go back to the teachers who potentially have it and say, look, does this even fit with your curriculum? Because I've been told by, you know, the English specialist that this is what we're doing. And you then, you know, then and then just researching and finding out. So I think they would be my two big things is go and speak to your IT guy. He's your best friend now. Pray that he isn't too technical and he understands education as well. And if he doesn't, force him to understand education, and then go and find your flag bearers, because they're the people that will share that voice, and they'll share what you're trying to achieve. They'll share your why for you, because if you can impart your passion and your desire to make your school the best it can possibly be, then they will want to help you.
I really love that idea of flag bearers, and you know, consistently coming back to that concept of, you know, the vision and the values and the teaching practice first.
So yeah, absolutely. I think the thing is, for me, it always goes back to that, right? What's the school there for? It's for students to learn and for us to teach. And if it's not centered around that, then why are we doing it? You know, mm-hmm. they, you know, it just, there's lots of things that they need to learn and can learn, but if it's not based around that, then why is it there?
Yeah, that's such a great point and so important. And just that connection, like all of this is about what are we doing for students? How are we doing the right thing for them? And how are we accomplishing these goals? And how do we just take all of the resources, whatever they are that are in front of us, and bring them together in a way that, you know, helps both our teachers and our students?
Philippa, thank you so much for such a great, you know, conversation. So many super important and great nuggets in there. We do have a final question that we like to ask everyone on the EdShift podcast. And that is, what has been the best part of your day today?
Oh, something really non-EdTechy. So we haven't announced like the team and everything for our school yet. And our principal took us outside, and I've been working with these three wonderful women and lots of other people, but specifically on our leadership team. And we've just been having such a giggle every day and just really like getting to the nitty gritty and the bones of education. It's been so wonderful. But yeah, today we got asked to come outside and have a photo taken for the kind of announcement. And it was just hilarious. We were sitting on the grass. One of them's the principal of secondary. She was like, isn't this what primary school people do? And then the primary school teacher's going, get down here. And it was just lovely. And I think that's like, for me, where you work is just so important to just everything that you do. And it was just fun. It was just really lovely and really fun.
Thank you so much. Philippa, where can everyone find you online and where can they find their book? Where can they learn more?
So you can find me on Twitter at Mrs. Wraithmell. You can also find me on LinkedIn as Philippa Wraithmell, and you can buy my book from Amazon globally. So that's great. Or you can buy it from John Catt Education as well. I don't know if they have it in the US store, though, so it's probably best to go to Amazon. A few different places.
Thanks for listening to the EdShift podcast. If you love the show, leave us a review. If you don't love it, let us know how we can make it better for you. You can connect with us by email or on social media anytime. Remember to check the show notes for resources, links, and connections with our guests, along with bonus lesson content connected to each episode's conversation. Thanks for being here and connecting with us.